Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. If you've got your Bibles this morning, let's go ahead and find John chapter 18. John chapter 18, we're going to look at the first, through verse 27, let me put it that way. Then we'll catch up the last half of the chapter next week. We've been journeying with Jesus and the disciples for a while now, and we've kind of come to a critical moment in the gospel. Jesus has just been on an extended teaching session with the disciples after the Last Supper. It was in chapter 13. And from verse chapter 14 to last week, through chapter 17, which we finished last week, we saw that Jesus taught a lot. He interacted with the disciples, answered a few questions, and it was an intimate time with just Jesus and the disciples. But all of that is going to change here today, because today things will progress very rapidly. So obviously we've got to cover it over the span of several weeks. But from this point forward, this is very late in the evening, when chapter 18 means very late, in the wee hours of the night. And by the next day at 9 a.m., Jesus is on the cross. And so things progress rather rapidly from this point forward with Jesus. So we're going to read, the way we'll kind of tackle this, like I said, verses 1 through 27 today, is we'll read a little bit and talk. Then we'll read a little bit and we'll talk, okay? So the first few verses are going to set the stage for what's going to happen. All right, so we'll read through verse number 3 today. All right, is everybody ready? All right, here we go. When Jesus had spoken these words, that's the end of the prayer that Jesus prayed in verse 17, in chapter 17. He went out with his disciples across the brook Kidron, where there was a garden which he and his disciples entered. All right, so he's on the Mount of Olives in this garden that the other Gospels called the Garden of Gethsemane. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. So this was a spot that they frequented, okay? So it was known to Judas. Judas probably knew that Jesus was going to be there that night. So Judas, having procured a band of soldiers and some officers from the chief priest and the Pharisees, went there with lanterns, torches, and weapons, right? Now you can kind of imagine the first two, right? Because it's dark, it's midnight, it's late. Whatever time it is, there's no electricity, so the light they have is the light they bring with them. And so the posse has all these lanterns and torches to light the way. Now remember, it's dark and you're in an olive grove type place. So there's trees. And so, you can imagine going into that setting. It'd be like walking into the woods at night with a torch. That's the only light you got. So the way John describes this group, now think about this, okay? I want you to think about it with me. How many disciples are there at this point? 11. Plus Jesus, so that makes 12. Now, if you're going to go find a guy and try to arrest him, and he has 11 friends, so there's 12 of them total, are you just taking 12 people? Negative. So the posse that comes and gets him is divided up into two groups. There's temple officials. Think of these as sheriffs of the temple, right? They're the temple police, so to speak. And then John adds that there's soldiers. Those are Roman soldiers. So it would have been a detachment of the legion of soldiers that was in Caesarea, which is kind of on the coast of Israel. And for Passover, a significant detachment of that legion would come down to Jerusalem to kind of keep the peace. And so a portion of that is there with the officials of the temple. Now, let me ask you this. Feel free to answer if you want to. Do the two groups like each other? No. So what are they doing? What's the cliche? An enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that's kind of the situation that's going on here. So you've got this posse, this band of arresters who's quite large with what? Lanterns, torches, and weapons, right? Weapons. Keep that in mind. All right, so let's keep reading. Verse 4. So that kind of sets the stage for what's about to happen. Judas is bringing the people. And they're going to arrest. There we go. All right, here we go. Then Jesus, knowing all that would happen to him, came forward and said to them. So Jesus sees the group. John has already told us on multiple occasions, Jesus has more knowledge than the average person. So he knows what's about to go down. He sees the group. It's pitch black dark. They're in a grove. You see the torches, many torches. They're coming toward. And when the group gets in the garden, Judas probably at the front, Jesus steps forward and asks them a question. Whom do you seek? Verse 5. They answered him. Jesus of Nazareth. All right, now, the part we're going to read next. Okay, so Jesus asked, can you speak? Somebody in the group, multiple people in the group say, we're looking for Jesus of Nazareth. Okay, now, what John's about to tell us in the next verse to verse and a half is unique to John, and it's an amazing story. Okay, so hang with me, and then we'll talk about it. Jesus said to them, I am he. Judas, who betrayed him, was standing with them. Verse 6. When Jesus said to them, I am he, they, what? Drew back and fell to the ground. All right, so let's talk about this for a minute. Okay? The word drew back literally means to take steps backwards. And the word, the phrase there, fell to the ground, literally means to fall to the ground. Like they didn't stumble, they didn't trip over a rock, they literally fell back, okay? So they took steps back, and then they fell on the ground, all right? Now, who fell on the ground? It's just they fell on the ground. It doesn't say a portion of the group fell on the ground. It doesn't say all the group fell on the ground. It just says they fell on the ground. So you can take that they to mean part of the group or all of the group, really, right? I would take it to mean all of the group, personally, because I think there's no differentiation to make you think it would be otherwise. All right, so Jesus asks, whom do you seek? They say, we seek Jesus of Nazareth. And then Jesus says, I am he. So the first question we got to ask is, what about that statement is unique? Well, if you've been with us through John, or if you haven't, if you read through John, you'll see that Jesus uses this, I am, often. Now, you could say Jesus is just answering the question, right? They said, Jesus asked, who do you seek? They said, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus says, oh yeah, that's me, right? But he says, I'm he. That means I'm the guy you're looking for. But we know through reading John, or if you hadn't, you can read through the book, you'll know that Jesus in John's gospel uses these I am statements very often. And he, like, for example, he'll say, I am the bread of life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I'm the vine, you're the branches. I'm the resurrection and the life. Right, so he said seven of these statements, and they all come with this kind of phrase at the end that kind of defines who Jesus is. But we also noted that Jesus leverages in John's gospel that I am phrase, because that I am phrase is the exact same phrase in Greek that God says to Moses at the burning bush, right? And so what Jesus is doing is he's leveraging that phrase to say that there's equality of character and mission between him and the Father. And so here, yeah, he's answering the question, I'm your guy, but he's also, again, leveraging that phrase, that I am phrase, to show that he has equality of character and nature, and in this case, power, like God does. And so then you ask the question, well, why did the group fall back? Well, you could have said, well, they stumbled. You could say, well, one commentator listed all of the ways that that people in the past have taken this. And one group said, oh, well, the arresters, the people who were doing the confronting, were caught off guard because Jesus confronted them. And they were so taken aback that they and they fell to the ground. Come on now. Come on. This is the same Jesus who said, Lazarus, come forth, and a dead man, a four-day-old, stone-cold dead man rose from the grave. Why do they draw back and fall down? Literally, again, we're seeing the power of Jesus' spoken word in the gospel. They fell back, and they drew back and fell to the ground because of the overwhelming power in Jesus' voice and in the message through which he was saying, right? And so they fall down to the ground. They eventually get back up, and in verses 7 through 9, Jesus asks them again, who do you seek? They say, Jesus of Nazareth. He says, I am the one that you're looking for. Just don't let... And then in the end, he says, well, just let my disciples go. Interesting. He's still thinking about the 11 guys. And so he says, let them go. And presumably the officers, the posse, are going to let the guys go. All right. So this is the scene. They've come in. Jesus has said, I am he. They fell to the ground. They've gotten back up. Jesus has said, hey, just let my guys go. And the kind of the stage is they're going to arrest Jesus. And at this point, Peter enters the story again. Now, we haven't heard from Peter since chapter 13. When Jesus wanted to wash his feet, and he said no. And they had that interaction around the foot washing. And then later on, Jesus says, one of you is going to betray me. And Peter says, I'll die with you. And Jesus says, oh, really? You will? Before this night's over, you're going to deny me three times. Right? And so Peter showed, and then Peter's silent for the rest of the time, chapters 14 through 17. He didn't say anything. Peter shows up because presumably he can't take it anymore that Jesus is about to be arrested. So what does Peter do? He whips out the sword and goes to kill a guy, right? And instead of killing him, he cuts off his ear. Now, John gives us the guy's name. His name's Malchus. And so he cuts Malchus's ear off. Now, that's pretty amazing, right? I mean, it's dark, torchlight. Peter's emotional, and he goes to, whoosh, he's fitting to take care of business. And instead he cuts the guy's ear off, right? So Jesus, again, being right there, steps in and tells Peter in verse 11, he asks Peter a question. He says, Peter, put your sword into its sheath. Now here's the question. Shall I not drink the cup that the Father has given me? Now the way Jesus phrases this question, the expected answer is, yes, Jesus, you should drink the cup the Father has given you. But Peter doesn't say anything. He doesn't respond at all. I want you to listen to me. I want you to hang on to the fact that the answer, the supplied answer should be, yes, Jesus, you should drink the cup the Father. But Peter doesn't answer at all. Now I want you to hold on to that, okay? It's going to be important for just a minute. Peter doesn't answer. So in verse 12 through 14, the soldiers arrest Jesus. They shackle him, chain him, and they lead him to a guy by the name of Annas, his house. Now, Annas is a key figure in this story. He was the high priest when Jesus was younger. The high priest is the highest ranking religious official in Israel. He was the high priest while Jesus was younger, about a decade plus before Jesus' ministry. But he got deposed by the Romans, but he has still held significant religious and authority in Israel. In fact, a number of his sons served as high priest. And in fact, this year, in the year that this story is going on, his son-in-law, Caiaphas, is the high priest. Right? And so right now, Jesus is going to Annas' house. And so that's what John tells us in verses 12 through 14. As this is happening in verse 15, we see Peter again. And what we're going to see from this point forward is these stories from Jesus and Peter, Jesus and Peter. And they're going to go back and forth. And so Peter was following Jesus along with another disciple. Now, there's debate as to who the other disciple is, but most commentators believe it's John. So we're going to say John and Jesus are following the posse who's arrested Jesus closely. And they're going to Annas' house, right? Now, John knows Annas. And so John gains access into the house rather quickly because he's known by the people who run the house. Peter They don't know Peter. And so John goes in. So here's the scenario. John goes in the house and then comes back out to the house to the person guarding the door and says, hey, I need him to get in too. And so John and Peter are both going into the house because Jesus is inside the house for what will amount to like a pretrial type thing, kind of interrogation. So Peter and John are walking into the house. As Peter gets to the door, there's a servant girl who's guarding the door, and she asks Peter a question, right? It's in verse number 17, I believe, or 16. Yeah, there we go. Here's what the servant girl asked Peter. Here we go. You ready? Ready? You ready? You also are not one of this man's disciples, are you? Right? So there's two ways you could read this question. All right? You're not one of those guys' disciples, are you? That's an accusatory. It was probably more like this. You ain't one of that guy's disciples, are you? It was more of a not accusing, but a more like sarcastic way of asking the question. That's how it's probably portrayed. Now remember, it's coming from a servant girl. Now remember I said when Jesus asked his question, there was an expected answer and it was, yes, you should drink this cup. Well, the way this girl asked this question, there's also an expected answer. And the answer is no. Like when the way she phrases the question, she's expecting Peter to say, no, I'm not with that guy. Now, when Jesus asked the question, what did Peter do? Did he answer? Nope, stayed silent. But now, in this scenario, now remember what's happened. Jesus has been arrested. Peter's cut a guy's ear off, right? Jesus is now in the high priest. Peter's in unfamiliar territory. Given the opportunity for an out, what does Peter do? He takes the out and he says, I am not. I am not, right? So that's denial number one, all right? So, verse 18. Now the servants and officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves by it. All right, let's keep going. Verse 19. Then the high priest questioned Jesus. So as Peter is getting in the house and telling the servant girl, I'm not with him, and going to this fire that they've made further inside the house, Jesus is being interrogated by Annas. Now, we don't know the exact question other than Jesus being questioned about his disciples and his teachings. Now, really quickly, I'm going to summarize this kind of section really quickly. Jesus offers several kind of points, arguments in his favor. He says, I spoke openly, like I didn't speak in secret. I spoke where everybody could hear. Number two, I spoke in the synagogues. That means like for us, that'd be the church. I spoke in the church. And then I spoke openly in the temple, which is run by the people who were doing this interrogation. And then he says, I didn't say anything in secret that I haven't said in public. So my messaging has been the same. And then fourthly, Jesus says, hey, look, if you'll go out in the streets, you can find somebody or some bodies that have heard me teach openly in public. Why don't you go ask them what I said? Well, they don't like that. And Annas and his people realize they're not getting anywhere with Jesus. So eventually, he's going to go to Caiaphas, right? The reigning high priest. But as this is happening, remember I said the story's going to go from Jesus to Peter to Jesus to Peter. At this same time as Jesus is telling Caiaphas all this, Peter's back in the courtyard by that charcoal fire because there's all these people milling around in the middle of the night and they're cold. And so they make a fire in this open courtyard and there's a good group of people that are warming themselves by the fire. Well, Peter is one of those people. And when this happened, verse 25, now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. So they said to him, so the idea is that multiple people were like, hey, isn't that the guy? Hey, what about this guy? Who's that guy? Hey, and then multiple people in the crowd began asking him, you also are not one of his disciples, are you? Again, the expected answer is no. When Jesus gave an expected answer for Peter, did he answer? No. But again, he does here. And what does he say? He denied it and said, I'm not. Right? I'm not. That's denial number two. So let's keep reading. Verse 26. One of the servants of the high priest, listen to this, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked him, did I not see you in the garden with him? So now we got a different perspective. Right? This guy is a family member of Malchus who just lost an ear. And the other Gospels, I forgot to tell you this part at the beginning. Luke tells us, I believe it's Luke tells us, that Jesus, after the ear's cut off, miraculously puts the ear back on. So so the arresters, now think about this. Let's kind of go back to the story for a second. Think about this. The arresters felt Jesus' power so much that they had to draw back and fall to the ground. Then they witnessed a man's ear get cut off, and Jesus miraculously put the ear back on, and yet they still arrested him. Crazy, right? Crazy. So this guy is in the garden. He saw the ear get cut off, and he's not quite sure if it was Peter or not. So he asked him, didn't I see you in the garden? Now, all John tells us of the story is, this is kind of the end, right? This is verse 27, this is where we're going to stop for today. Peter again denied it, and at once a rooster crowed. Now, that's where John ends the story. Now, if you read the other Gospels, you get a little bit more information, and it gives you a kind of a worse aspect of what happens. Because what happens in this third denial, the other Gospels tell us that Peter cursed and swore. And so the best way for us to understand that is he cussed a curse. So think of the nasty words you're not supposed to say, and then add a curse on yourself along with that. And that's what Peter said. And then Luke tells us that as soon as Peter finishes this third denial, he and Jesus make eyes. Because they're close enough that they can see each other, but they're far enough apart. And as at once when Peter finishes his tirade of obscenities, he looks and Jesus looks and they make eye contact, and immediately Peter remembers what Jesus said, and immediately the rooster crows. And they say Peter runs out weeping and wailing and just runs away, right? And that's how the story ends, right? That's how this kind of segment in Jesus' journey is. Now we're going to pick up what happens next week, but I want to hang out just for a minute in our remaining about 10 minutes that we've got here this morning, and I want to kind of draw some conclusions and some application of what we need to take home from this story, because there's two overarching points that we need to take home. Okay, here's the first one, and here's the most important one on a macro level. It is that Jesus is in complete control. All right. See, the only power, listen to me, the only power that the arresters and the posse have over Jesus is that which he allows them to have. Think about it with me for a minute. Jesus, all he says is, I am he. And what happens? They fall back. They lurch back and then fall on the ground. What could Jesus have done at that moment? Run away. But he doesn't. What else could Jesus have done? He could have let Peter keep swinging that sword. Peter would have surely died in the process at some point, because there's a bunch of them and one of him. But what does it allow Jesus to do? Run away. And to make it even more over the top that Jesus is in control, in one of the other Gospels, Jesus, after Peter cuts the dude's ear off, says, do you not know that I could ask my Father and he would send 12 legions of angels, that's like 12,000 angels, to come down? How do you think that would have gone for the posse? They would have been decimated, annihilated instantaneously. But what does Jesus not do? He doesn't call for that assistance. So Jesus has three opportunities to get away and chooses none of them. And then on top of that, when he says, I am he, and they're falling on the ground, he could have kept them on the ground, but he doesn't. He allows them to get back up. Right? Jesus is in complete control of this entire situation. And the only power that they have over him is that which he gives them. So throughout, from this point forward, as we have seen throughout the rest of the Gospels, do not think that Jesus is not in control. I think I've mentioned this a while back, and this is a little bit forward in the story, but I mentioned it months ago, I believe, that when I was in college, I read a book by John MacArthur called The Murder of Jesus. And the entire book, the title of the book is kind of it's a laughable title in the end, because the whole book is a critique on the fact that Jesus wasn't murdered, but that he willingly gave up his life, right? Two different things, right? It was a sacrifice of his life, not a murder. And so here we see once again that Jesus is in total 100% control. But you can't walk away from this story and not see that John intentionally and purposefully puts Peter and Jesus scenes back to back to back. Because his point is to draw a distinct difference from the in-control Jesus in the story and the out-of-control Peter in the story. Right? How does Jesus react? He reacts with control, with dignity. He doesn't straight and narrow. How does Peter react? Emotional, irrational, slashing, cutting, swinging swords, and then masterfully denying Jesus at every turn. And so John intentionally sets this story up to show how great Jesus is and how poor Peter is. Right? And so we see that Jesus is in control. So what's the lesson we learn from Peter? Now, whenever you read a story, listen to me. Whenever you read any story, especially like any story, it doesn't matter what kind it is, fiction, nonfiction, doesn't matter. Whenever you read a story or whenever you watch a movie, you often identify yourself with one of the characters. You'll say like, man, I really like that character. The reason you like that character a lot is you identify with, you're like, hey man, I'd be that guy in the story, or I'd be that lady in the story. And when you read the Bible, it's no different, right? But listen to me. If you read this story, and I read this story, and we read this story, listen. If you do not identify with Peter in the story, you're not reading the story right. Listen to me. Because see, some of us, automatically when we read the story, we identify with Jesus. Man, I'd be the guy who's sticking it to the man. I'd be the one who's, you ain't going to arrest her, who's walking toward the arresters. No. You Peter, just like I am, hacking and swinging, emotional, irrational, doing crazy stuff, denying Jesus on the back end, right? See, the story is set up in order for us to see that we are Peter, and on a macro level, Peter is all of us. We are the ones who, given the opportunity to align ourselves with Jesus, choose to be silent. But when given the chance of an out to save face, we take the out, right? See, that's the point. Peter is all of us. And let me give you another little insight that I thought of this week. The other part that we see in this story that really relates to our lives is, where did Peter's tragic downfall in the story happen? It happened in the denial section. It happened when Peter denied Jesus to who? To a slave girl who simply guarded the door. Did she have any power? Nope. Would they have listened to her word if she would have ran into the thing and said, hey, he's up? She wouldn't have made it. No. But what does the story show us? Whenever we sin a little bit, it's a whole lot easier to sin again and again and again until it becomes a big thing. Because see, if Peter stops the first time, there's not a second and there's not a third. In order to get to 2 and 3, you got to have 1. Right? And so Peter is all of us in the sense that also, not only are we the ones who leave Jesus, Jesus doesn't leave us, we're the ones who walk away, but it's also in the fact of how we do it. We don't start, most of us, let's be honest, we don't start with gargantuan sins. We start with little bitty ones here, and then a little bit bigger, and then a little bit bigger, and then it becomes catastrophic. It's exactly what Peter did here. Now, I don't want to just leave. Now, we could just stop right there and be like, hey. But that's not the end of the story for Peter, right? Now, Peter will, and not to give it away, but we'll look at this at Easter and afterwards. Peter will get another shot. The trick is, or the difference is, Peter's going to have to wait 3 days. Peter's got to wait for Jesus to die and rise again before he can serve Jesus again, because it's going to take that great grace and mercy to forgive what Peter has just done. Right? So there will be hope for Peter through Christ. Right? Jesus will forgive Peter. We're going to read all about it. It's the last story in the Gospel of John. It's a beautiful story. Right? I'd encourage you to go ahead and read it today. It's a wonderful story. But Peter had to wait. So here's the cool part for you and me today. You and I don't have to wait 3 days, because Jesus has already died and he's already defeated death. And so if you're Peter today, which, look at me, it's no shame. We've all been Peter. You might be Peter this week. You might be Petering now, like today. But you don't have to wait any longer. Like, you don't have to wait 3 days. You can get his mercy and grace and forgiveness and get back on the road of redemption and righteousness today. I was reminded of this song, and I'll close with this. I'm not going to sing it. Right? I know some people who might, but I was reminded of this song, and the song was not written about this situation. It was written about another story with Peter, but it was the song the Lord brought to my mind, right? You'll know it. You might know it. If you don't, you can look at it up. You can Google it later and listen to it on YouTube. Here's the words of the song. All right, you ready? I was sinking deep in sin, far from the peaceful shore, very deeply stained within, sinking to rise no more. Now here's what the second line says. Souls in danger, look above. Jesus completely saves. Now here's the chorus line. But the master of the sea heard my despairing cry, and from the waters lifted me. Now safe am I. Right? Guess what? When you're petering in your life, just remember, the master of the sea can hear your despairing cry, and he will lift you out of the waters of your own making and put you back on as Psalm 40 says, on a firm rock to stand, on dry ground, and give you redemption and put you back on the road to righteousness. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.